It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today, David Widmar, an economist. First, Brad Rippey with USDA.
Generally speaking, El Nino often has a positive or a favorable impact on winter wheat. Now, we do sometimes see warmer and drier than normal conditions in the northern production areas, especially, say, Montana and into South Dakota. However, without the significant cold outbreaks that sometimes come with winter, that often helps the winter wheat health, even in the absence of significant snowfall. And then further south, you get into the more highly concentrated production areas of Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas. El Nino often leads to a wetter than normal winter, and that is typically positive for winter wheat outcomes. And so overall, the El Nino prospect for winter wheat tends to be favorable for the United States. So following a couple of years of pretty tough drought, especially in the Great Plains, perhaps a more favorable outcome for winter wheat and the possibility of lower abandonment numbers compared to the last couple of years.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by David Widmar. David's an economist, co-founder of Agricultural Economic Insights. We call it AEI. David, welcome back to the show.
Great to join you, Tony. Thanks for having me on this week.
Okay. A little background for those who don't know about AEI, which is available online at AEI.ag. What is Agricultural Economic Insights?
We found Agricultural Economic Insights about a decade ago with the mission of providing more insights to improve the quality of decisions made at the farm level, both by farmers and those trusted advisors who work with producers. And so we think about, in addition to the 30,000-foot picture of what's going on with U.S. and global commodities, we also talk about the farm economy and what's going on with the U.S. economy and the global situation, how all that ties down to the management decisions that producers make, you know, beyond just marketing their grains. So, you know, interest rates and debt utilization and all these other issues that managers have to weed through, we're there providing insights along the way.
You know, I heard something earlier today that it was somewhat of a debate about whether or not we're headed into a recession. And then I got to thinking, I think we've been talking about this for a few years now. This is something that's not really new, but we are coming off of some really big times in ag. Is that a good way to set the table?
Well, there's always that quote about economists predicting 8 of the last 2 recessions or some variation of economists tend to predict more recessions that we all always have. But I think the way that you frame this is really appropriate, Tony, is we've had a really strong run in the farm economy. The pendulum has been swung to the really favorable side of things, both the last 3 years, but also pretty favorable last decade. I think a lot of producers are wondering what's around the corner and when and what will the next shoe drop be.
So in just a moment, I'm going to ask you about 2024 and looking forward to that. But one area that you and I have talked about in the past is interest rates and some concerns about, oh my gosh, as these interest rates continue to climb, are we headed back to the 80s again? And obviously, now that we look back, we haven't quite hit that point, but interest rates still a concern?
Interest rates are a huge concern. One is the fact that they've increased so much. We're at historically low interest rates, and we saw a lot of increase. Now, there is a rightful argument out there that interest rates currently aren't at historically high levels. They're close to maybe what we expect to be a long run average. But the other issue, the other thought that's out there is we don't know where interest rates are going. And that's what I think leads a lot of producers to caution. And we've spent the last decade either at historically low, very stable interest rates. And now we have considerably higher interest rates and not a lot of stability. It's very open-ended as to where the interest rate market will be a year from now.
We rely heavily on exports, and I'm on the website right now, AEI.ag. You've got an area in there called Weekly Insights, and last month had one on Chinese ag purchases in 2023. We have passed that phase one agreement that was signed while Trump was still in office. And I guess we could debate whether or not the phase one agreement actually lived up to expectations. But Chinese ag purchases, have we seen a changing landscape there?
You know, it's great that you brought up the phase one trade agreement. You know, we kind of signed that and forgot about it instantly because the world, of course, was dealing with the pandemic. And China has been making record amounts of purchases in terms of total dollars. They've crossed the $40 billion threshold here, or approached it there in 2022. And what is important to keep in mind in the back of our minds is that phase one was sort of a bridge to nowhere. We didn't really have a way of scoring that or really understanding how we were going to grade it, you know, pass versus fail. The Trump administration didn't get that far in that process, and the Biden administration hasn't picked that up or completed the process. So we're kind of in this limbo where the trade war isn't what it used to be. You know, we're not, I guess, probably not in technical trade war, but we haven't returned to, you know, pre-2017, 2018 trade relations with China. So that's the big uncertainty there. But yes, China's purchases have been changing a lot. We've seen them buy a lot of corn in 2020 and late 2020 and 21 and 22. That has significantly dropped here in 2023, especially in the last few months. Think about the new crop that we have harvesting. They're starting to buy a little more soybeans than they've bought in the last few years, an uptick in quantity of soybeans. That's a positive development. They're also buying quite a bit of beef from the U.S. So that's also been another positive development. So there are a lot of factors going on here. And China's activity just hasn't, while the dollars are there, the quantities have not been as strong as maybe we would have initially thought.
I'm glad you mentioned soybeans, because another one of the insights that was posted was soy oil, and that remains strong. And when we're talking about soybeans, we, I guess, could also throw in the idea of the aircraft fuel that we're looking at as well. So is all of that possibly something to keep in mind as we go into 24?
Yes. One of the bright spots in the demand story and the usage story of ag commodities has been the increase in soybean oil going to biofuels. And this caught a lot of attention a couple years ago in this kind of fever about new crush facilities coming online and the possibility of sustainable aviation fuel. But what we looked in the data and we saw is that actually biofuels, soybean oil going into biofuel production has been trending higher for the last 10 years. We're a couple years away from biofuels being the biggest usage of soybean oil in the United States. And what's been playing on the background is food and feed usage of soybean oil has been flat for several decades, and exports have been trending lower. So we've been planting more soybeans, you know, in general over the last decade or so. We have higher yields over time thanks to trend yield increases, and we've been using more of those soybeans here domestically, and that oil has been being used for biofuels. And so that's a new demand source. But of course, it's important to keep in mind that the soybean is a component crop. And what does that mean? That means we have to crush the soybean to extract its value through soybean meal, soybean oil, and the soybean hulls. And so what we've seen the last, you know, few years, a lot of talk about soybean crush facilities coming online, and we're starting this year and into next year and into 2025, we'll see those soybean crush facilities come online, and we'll see how this plays out in the years to come. Ag is dominated by, for the most part, trends that take several years, if not decades, or careers to unfold. And so when we're talking about this biofuel and soybean, as I mentioned earlier, there's a 10 years of history already baked into that data series. And we're probably several years away, maybe 10 years away, from sustainable aviation fuel being a huge driver here. And so we have to practice a lot of patience when we deal with new sources of demand in agriculture.
Okay. Mentioned this early on, so let's go ahead and tee it up. The outlook for 2024, what are you seeing in that crystal ball, if you will?
One of the first things it's really important to note is fertilizer prices have came down a lot. How much improvement you're going to see in producer budgets depends on the timing of when producers bought fertilizer for last year's crop, when they're going to buy fertilizer for this year's crop. But there's a lot of movement here in fertilizers, and that's been a huge source of improvement. The second thing we're going to notice is that commodity prices for the 2024 planted crops aren't all that much different and maybe slightly improved from the prices that we're seeing today. Now, these are still significantly lower than what we were in the cash markets a year ago or even 9 months ago at this point. But the offset and lower production expenses has been beneficial for the budgets across the board. A couple things we're watching, of course, is how many acres of winter wheat will be planted. That's the first battle of the annual acreage debate. The second thing we're going to be carefully watching is, you know, we have a tight soybean balance sheet, and we have a bit of a burdensome corn balance sheet. We got this corn soybean production in 2023 a little bit out of alignment based on all these acres that we planted to corn. So how does that set the stage for the corn versus soybean allocation of acreage heading into the 2024 growing season? It's still early, but we need to watch the price ratio, but also the budget return projections.
Okay. Let's come back full circle to Agricultural Economic Insights, the website, AEI.ag. If we want to learn more about AEI and the things that you're offering, what's the elevator speech on that?
Well, feel free to check out the website. We have the free weekly insights article. We have a few award-winning podcast seasons around the 1980s farm crisis, carbon markets and the rise of ethanol. And then the last one was about interest rates. So we talked a little bit about the idea of nothing borrowed, nothing gained. Where does the money that producers borrow, where does it come from, and how is it impacted by the Federal Reserve's decisions? And so if you're curious, you want to upgrade your thinking about agriculture and the decisions that you make on a regular basis as an agricultural professional, encourage you to get started at AEI.ag and work your way through the free content, podcast, and eventually our subscription.
Again, you can find more online, AEI.ag. David Widmar is an economist and co-founder of Agricultural Economic Insights on today's Agribusiness Report.
Supporting the High Plains cotton producer is the number one priority for Plains cotton growers. Since its inception in 1956, PCG has focused on being the advocate for High Plains cotton and a respected voice on cotton issues. Protecting the interest of the High Plains cotton producer requires a dependable, dedicated organization focused on getting results, and cotton producers depend on the organization they founded, Plains Cotton Growers. From the halls of Congress to the turn rows of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest again, David Widmar with Agricultural Economic Insights.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses, and that's just the start. You grow the cotton, the Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, keep up with David Widmar and AEI online, AEI.ag.
Life doesn't come with guarantees, but working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson.
We are in dire straits as a nation. And if you talk to leaders at the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Pentagon, sometimes even in recent years under oath, they've testified before the House Armed Services Committee, where I served until last week. If you ask them what the greatest threat is to our national security, you would expect, most people expect, they'd say China, Russia, Iran, terrorism. They say it's the national debt. We have to address it. We have obligations and we have commitments, and we want to protect our and help and assist our friend Israel, but we have to keep our own house in order as well. And I think people at home, I think the American people understand that. At home, you have to balance your budget. At home, you have to make tough decisions. And Washington should run the same way. And so we are here to change the environment, to change the paradigm, the way Washington thinks. If we continue on the trajectory we're on, it's going to hurt our country terribly. And it's going to hurt hardworking Americans even more, seniors and the rest. So we have to, while we take care of obligations, we've got to do it in a responsible manner.